Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam syndrome once and for all.
Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, man, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
Hey y'all, how's it going?
I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show.
Here on the Liberty Radio Network.
Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. And you'll see this tweet I just tweeted out. It says, today's show, Andrew Coburn. Andrew Coburn. Oh, I think you're going to like his new article. Over there at the Harper's. Yes, siree, I do believe you will. I'm going to queue up the single page version now. All right. I don't want to spoil the surprise by even telling you what it's called. I guess if you go to harpers.org, then you can see for yourself. Otherwise, it'll be a nice surprise. Unless you saw me tweet it out last night, in which case, yeah, not so much. Thanks to Brad Hoff at Levant Report for the hat tip here. For tweeting out this link last night. I had a couple of more invites out and they didn't seem to really be working. Should catch up with Yosef, but he's been sending a lot of emails out about nuclear things. I haven't been keeping track. I got to catch up. By the way, if I owe you an email, I'm sorry, dude. I know. I you know what? I will get to it soon. That could be a lot of people. You know who you are. There's more than a couple. Maybe more than a few. But anyway, I'm going to get that taken care of for you. All right, well, so, I'm Scott, and it's my show, Scott Horton Show. And on the front page of antiwar.com today, you will see a piece, not even a piece, you'll see a picture of Bo Bergdahl. And it's a link to his interview on the Serial podcast. Now, I admit, I didn't listen to the thing. Because I don't have time for this kind of thing. However, I did read an article about it. And in fact, it was a pretty critical article. But it doesn't matter. Because the point of it was that it's basically beyond dispute that Bo Bergdahl is a dumbass who left his base, according to himself, it sounds like to me, with some delusions of grandeur of what a super soldier he was and just how much like an action movie this was going to be. And then he quickly got himself captured. But he was leaving his base to go to another U.S. Army base to tell superior officers, basically to tattletale on the people who were running his base. And in fact, there was such lax discipline at his base that it had made the news in a lot of other ways, including being featured in Restrepo. If I remember right, it's the same group of guys. They're running around going out into combat in baseball hats. They don't even have helmets on. Basically, it's Lord of the Flies out there. Nobody's in charge. the highest, you know, the lowest ranking officer in charge is basically goofing off. And Bergdahl, Mr. Self, you know, described super soldier, as they put it in, you know, what the, in the accusations against him. He refused to adjust to realities and was stuck on, you know, this comic book, you know, meaning TV ad version of what the military was. And instead he was dealing with the actual army. And, but anyway, the point is that no, he didn't go over to the Taliban at all, ever. Did you think that? Did you let people think, make you think that?
Yeah, that guy, Bo Bergdahl, he's a traitor.
He is a traitor? No, he was a prisoner of war. Well, I heard somewhere that somebody said that he wanted to walk to Pakistan or China or something like that. Yeah, well, that wasn't true. Well, I heard that a whole bunch of guys died while out looking for him. Well, that wasn't true either. And I guess, you know, it could have been true. And that would be an ugly thing, but that would make him a traitor. And my point here isn't even about Bo Bergdahl as much as about right-wing media in America. I mean, the left-wingers got their problems. Don't get me wrong, but that's just not my point this time. You got millions, I guess tens of millions of Americans convinced that this guy is the lowest rat since, I don't know, Obama or Bush or some traitor like that. Benedict Arnold. Franklin Roosevelt. And yet, no, he wasn't. But just think how powerful all that propaganda was. Think how easy it was for people with power to convince millions of Americans to hate this guy, to turn him into this hate figure. Meanwhile, you're supposed to drop everything, stop and clap, and if you see him at the airport, you're supposed to see him as some kind of demigod, the very, very best and brightest of our entire society, up until the point that you betray him and curse him and stab him in the back and say that, no, he ought to, as Donald Trump, the front runner for president in both parties right now, says he should be taken out and shot. No trial, just, I'm pretty sure I know what's going on here, kill him. And you think about it, they could have just as easy spun the entire thing as Obama's betrayal of this guy. For years and years, he would not do what it took to get our last heroic American POW release. Oh, our only one. POW release from the Taliban. And blah, blah, blah. And what a wimp and what a Democrat. And he ain't patriotic enough to care enough and blah, blah, blah. They could have spun it the other way just as easy. Only then it would have been true. It would have had, you know, something to do with the actual facts of the case. So can't have that. No, sir. If it's a right-wing meme, it has to be completely wrong, or they won't believe it. I guess. Anyway, yeah, guess what? Low morale over there in the 14-year-long war in Afghanistan. Wait, what the hell are we out here for? What's that base named Restrepo? It's named after a dead American soldier who got killed holding territory in the Korangal Valley where he never had any business in his whole life. And where from the moment they set foot there, they knew that this is never going to work. It's never going to last. And at some point, someone will be the last man to die for a bad tactic in putting a fire base out here in the Korangal Valley. Okay, let's do it. And off they go. When's the last time you heard about a heroic battle to bring democracy and enlightenment and schools for girls to the Korangal Valley where Restrepo and so many others died and killed in this ridiculous waste of a war. Then Obama's massive doubling of it, this huge surge that did not work to do anything except prolong the war, prolong the suffering, kill tens of thousands of more people. And Taliban are coming right back. Hell, I said to Ann Jones one time on the show, I was like, so, you know, when we're down to 10,000 troops or something, are we looking at a Saigon moment here where, you know, the last Americans have to flee? It's not enough even for force protection, and the Taliban come back into Kabul? She says, the Taliban are in the parliament right now, dude. They're already back. You're talking about the last stages of their consolidation, which, yeah, is coming soon enough.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
Man, I'm hungry. I'm tired.
Anyway, whatever. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. Andrew Coburn's coming up. You'll be interested in what he's got to say.
Man, there's so much stuff to talk about. I guess I want to talk about the cops here for a second, because go to my Twitter, dude. You got to see this.
Where, it's not a car chase or anything. The cop's going to pull this guy over, but he hadn't even gotten around to pulling him over yet before the guy flips the car. He hits a median and flips. Nice driving, idiot. I was just reading the story during the break here. Said his wife was killed. She was thrown from the car, didn't have her seatbelt on, I guess. Was ejected from the vehicle in the rollover and was killed. The car ends up on its side. The guy goes to climb out of the car. So picture the car on its side. He puts both his hands out the window, you know, and then he's pulling himself up. And he's most of the way up. He's, you know, not quite up to sitting on the side of the car door. But so, you know, he's pushing down with both hands on the car. They are both completely and fully occupied and both clearly holding nothing but car as he's pushing himself up. And the cop just straight shoots him right through the neck. It's amazing the guy's not dead. Amazing. And you want to know especially why it's amazing? The cop that shot him, he didn't say that he shot the guy. The other cops arrive on the scene, he doesn't tell them that he shot the guy. It was 11 minutes before he told anyone he shot the guy. In fact, it's at least, I wasn't watching, I actually had it, you know, running in the background on another tab. And then I heard him say, you know, we're going to need an ambulance here, or we're going to need some medical help here. But minutes had gone by, at least, I don't know, 2-3 minutes at least, before he even said he needed an ambulance. And then he didn't tell anyone that he shot the guy, or that the guy had even been shot, for 11 minutes. And then they said, well, geez, maybe he got shot at the bar. And that was why he ran out and got in his car and drove so crazy over here. So let's send an investigator back over to the bar to find out if he got shot there. And only then did the cops say, "Ah, oh, geez, boss, I'm the one who shot him." You see what's going on there? He's hoping the guy will bleed out to death. He's trying to kill him by depriving him of medical attention. He's shot. Presumably, there's an entrance and an exit wound where the vital life liquid is leaking. Sorry for that. I should call it there. And anyway, no charges. The cop can shoot you if he feels like it. Oh, he swears it was an accident. Dan Sanchez points out on Twitter, the article reads, quote, "The gun discharged." Yeah, the human man pulled the trigger, firing the gun. The one human shot the other human. Oh, but I'm in the news business, so my job is spinning for the state always first. At that point, the gun discharged. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Except for cops' guns. Whenever cops' guns kill somebody, it's the guns that do it. Isn't that amazing how that works? It's because they have a pact. All government employees have a pact with each other that none of them will ever hold each other accountable for anything ever. They can kill whoever they want, whenever they want. And then you show me, oh yeah, well what about the cop that got convicted of raping 13 women in Oklahoma City? And I say, well, that's the exception that proves the rule. That's, if you look at Twitter yesterday, everybody's saying, you know, I'm not even happy. This one guy, Elon James, said, I'm not even happy. I'm just not going to burn anything down. Because I was gonna. Eh, important to note, too, I think. All white jury in Oklahoma City. They didn't convict him on every single count, but on a hell of a lot of them. He's facing up to 260-something years in prison, although he still could get, you know, $50 in time served, a year of probation, and an ankle bracelet. I'll be amazed if he gets the max. But even then, all that proves is that that never happens. All that proves is that America is a land with thousands and thousands and thousands of rapist cops. There's a cop raping a prostitute right now, and you know it. And they always get away with it, except this one time. And how was it that this guy had raped 13 women and hadn't been convicted of that before? They were all poor and black, many of them prostitutes, with drug convictions. And that was how he targeted them, was, oh, looks like you got a warrant here. Well, either you're going to go to jail or you're going to do this or that for me. Gun to their head. Credible threat. And he was raping them and raping them and raping them. But then he screwed up and he accidentally pulled over a middle-class black lady who was driving through the poor part of town. Oops. And he raped her, but she was like, screw you, I know lawyers, I'm telling. She didn't have drug charges and prostitution charges and anything that he could hold over her head. Maybe her children were grown enough, she didn't have to worry about them getting taken away from her. So she fought. And the cop has some funny, not very white name. What is he, Hawaiian or something? He's some kind of weird Asian or something. So he can be sacrificed for the good of the state. Oh, yeah, look how much we love you. Yeah, we'll let one of our enforcers rape 13 of you. But, you know, if he's sort of kind of white, but not really, and we'll go ahead and convict him for you. You know, one out of every 10 or 15,000 rapist cops. You know, so you'll love us. Well, you know, it's funny. I wake up in the morning and all I hear all day is about cops murdering people, raping people. People innocent of doing anything to anyone, going to prison. Aggressive wars. Destruction of the money supply and every other thing. But, oh, God, I love them so much. What would we ever do without them? In fact, I'm going from the cops stop killing people rally to the cops do more to people all the time rally right now. I'm going from the Black Lives Matter rally straight to the cops we want to see you enforce more gun control laws rally. And I'm not going to drop dead of cognitive dissonance on the way either. I just love them. Don't you just love them?
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to MPVEngineering.com.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. All right. So,
check this out. Thanks to Brad Hoff for tweeting out the link last night. I think maybe I got dropped from the email list or something here, but Andrew Coburn's got a brand new one in Harper's. Welcome back to the show, Andrew. How you doing?
Hey, Scott. Great to be with you.
Very good to talk to you again. And hey, great to read you. And check it out, guys. A special relationship, and it's not about Israel. Actually, I spoke too soon. It's a little bit about Israel. It's maybe a lot bit about Israel. A special relationship. The United States is teaming up with Al Qaeda again. Really great piece here. Great to see this in Harper's. Hope it gets a lot of attention. Hey, there's a single page button on the right side there, guys. You'll like that. Use it. Use it wisely. And you can find the link from my Twitter feed, of course. All right, so, one thing I really like about this article is how you take us back to the old days. You were a reporter back then, and so obviously know a lot about this stuff, and you really give us, I think, a pretty unique history of the CIA intervention in Afghanistan in the 1980s. Not entirely unique, but it's very interesting to read and good. And then, you know, the very early blowback from that, the two-way, pressure valve or whatever it is, as you call it in here. So, take us back. Tell us some stories about Ronald Reagan's support for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the war against the Soviets in, the 1980s. Oh, or unless you want to start in the Carter years.
Well, I do. Yeah. You know, everyone's forgotten this is such ancient history, but it's really why we are where we are now. You know, you could draw a straight line from then to San Bernardino, I guess. I am starting with the Carter years because it was in those years that Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's national security advisor, conceived the really brilliant scheme of supporting Islamic groups, I don't know if we can call them terrorists yet, but anyway, Islamic sort of extremists in Afghanistan, which had never really been an extremist. It was a very pious Muslim country, but they weren't extremists. They were kind of they weren't hard over about it. You know, they were Sufis. They were quite gentle type, a gentle type of religion of Islam, really. Anyway, he was supporting them against the leftist regime, which, as he boasted in an interview later, with the express idea of getting the Russians to intervene, which he wanted to give them their Vietnam, which, you know, he hoped, therefore, to bring down the Soviet Union, but in the meantime, start a war, which he was amazingly successful in. He started a war in Afghanistan, or, you know, promoted a war, which killed a million people. And I've never seen or heard a flicker of regret from him on this. Anyway. Yeah,
he always boasts about it. In fact, I'm sorry, I got to do this. It just take a few, like not even a minute, but I just got this soundbite brand new from a friend the other day, sent it to me. This is actually Zbigniew Brzezinski in Afghanistan addressing the Mujahideen, Andrew.
We know of their deep belief in God, and we are confident that their struggle will succeed. That land over there is yours. You'll go back to it one day, because your fight will prevail, and you'll have your homes and your mosques back again, because your cause is right, and God is on your side.
Because your cause is right, and God is on your side, he says.
Oh, what a turkey. Anyway, so then, you know, Reagan comes in, and this is, you know, really believes in the cause. And so the CIA pours money in, and weapons. Now, the excuse, they've always said that, oh, you know, we didn't know where it was going. We just gave it all to Pakistani intelligence, and they decided who got it. And that excuse is there because it turned out who was getting it were the most extreme Islamic fundamentalists, people like Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who had made a name for himself early on in the early 70s by throwing acid in women's faces if he thought they were showing too much of their faces. Later on, he earned a reputation for skinning prisoners alive. He was a very, 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 very unpleasant guy who would have nothing to learn from ISIS and, you know, our current monsters. So, I mean, that excuse that, oh, well, we didn't control it, it was all the Pakistanis, is there because Gulbuddin, actually, he was the largest recipient of US aid by far. He was our favorite Afghan. What I say in the piece was it's all baloney that, you know, that they were hands off. They were very hands on. In fact, one of the, you know, more secular, moderate, you know, anti-Russian resistance people at the time said, the CIA micromanaged the campaign. So they were definitely involved. They selected the people who got the money, and the people who got the money were these, you know, fanatics who were the, and among them, not only was Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, but was a very intriguing character called Abdullah Azam, who was considered the father of the Arab Mujahideen. And he not only got, you know, got a lot of support, he came here on numerous occasions. He was in and out of this country all the time with official blessing to recruit people to go do jihad in Afghanistan. So this country was a recruiting ground for these people.
Hey, let me ask you something about that too, by the way.
Go ahead.
Now, I think, as far as I know, this comes from Ted Gunderson, a former FBI agent, but who's a complete lunatic. But on the other hand, it's at least supposedly, you know, documentation and pieces of paper that talk about that, you know, supposedly at least link Osama bin Laden to some of these trips with Abdullah Azam in the 1980s, and that he was here in the country and traveling under the name Tim Osman. And I wonder whether you know if that's true, that Osama bin Laden himself ever came.
I've never seen supporting evidence, and you know, there was no, people have looked into Abdullah Azam quite carefully. I mean, would be happy to believe that. I'm not sure. I mean, I'll leave it open. I don't know. But Azam certainly had official blessing here, and he had, back in Afghanistan or in Pakistan, he had this bright young Saudi rich kid, Osama bin Laden, who was like his sidekick. And that was really the birth of Al-Qaeda. So moving forward.
Well, in fact, I'm sorry to step on you here, but I'll just add one more thing here, too. Eric Margulies has told the story on the show quite a few times about how in 1989, Abdullah Azzam told him to his face that when we're done with the Soviets, you're next, Yankee imperialist. And and that Margulies was shocked by this because here, we're your buddies and only communists call us imperialists, so that's ridiculous. And then he started explaining about, you know, American military role, you know, the American military role in the Middle East and how it was going to come to an end one way or the other, and how Margulies took him very seriously back then.
Right. In fact, Azzam was... Yeah, go on.
I'm sorry, I just meant to say he began to take that very seriously at that point, way back.
Yeah. Well, Azzam was... He was murdered in the end of 1989, and there were a lot of candidates for who did it, who, maybe bin Laden himself, but his widow told actually my Leslie Coburn, my wife, who did an investigation of all this in the early 90s, that she was convinced that the CIA had done it. Now, you know, take that as you like, but it might have made sense, not just for what he was telling Eric Margulies, but what he was also saying, maybe even more serious, was he was going to take the tribe, their methods, of, you know, what they'd been doing in Afghanistan, what they'd learnt, and tactics and techniques to Israel.
And well, that's where we'll pick this conversation up on the other side of this break. Bear with me, Andrew. We'll be right back. It's the great Andrew Coburn writing in Harper's, America's new, again, alliance with Al-Qaeda.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
All right, y'all, welcome back. Sorry to Andrew Coburn and everybody for the hard breaks here. We got to do what we got to do radio. Talking with Andrew Coburn, author of Rumsfeld. Oh, you got to read that. And also Kill Chain, which is great. But you got to read Rumsfeld, His Rise, Fall, and Catastrophic Legacy. And he wrote a bunch of other books, too. And here he is, again, writing at Harper's.org, where he's a such and such editor fellow something, and this piece is called A Special Relationship. It's about America's alliances with Al-Qaeda back in the day and brand new. So we're going to get to the Syria war in a minute, but right where we got interrupted at the break, Andrew, you were saying that your wife reported that she was told back when that it was the CIA who had killed Abdul Azzam. Doesn't sound like it was 100%, but it seemed like maybe they had the possibility there. But so, and then you were saying that, and that had to do with a possible threat to Israel.
Well, yeah, Azzam, it was Mrs. The widow Azzam who told Leslie that.
So yeah, that's a pretty good source.
Yeah, no, she was very, very convinced of that. It wasn't just stray gossip in the bazaar. Yeah, Azzam was saying that he wanted to. Take the jihad to Israel, which obviously would not have been that would have been bad enough bringing it here, but bringing it to Israel would have gone down really badly. So who knows? But the point I want to put your stress is that, you know, this whole thing, recruitment of extremists across the Arab world and in this country, as I was explaining earlier, it had a twofold purpose. One was to bring, you know, cannon fodder to the front line against the Soviets, but the other was to get rid of people. Abu Hamza, who, you know, became a notorious, well, you know, is now doing 300 years or something for terrorism in some supermax here in this country. He said that he explained at the time, he said this was a vent. The idea was you got rid of, you know, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Yemenis, and even the Americans, the Tunisians, could get rid of, you know, what they regard as troublemakers by sending them off to fight in Afghanistan and, you know, maybe hopefully get killed. But they didn't all get killed, of course. And as the U.S. found out in 1993, when a group of jihadis, including someone who'd been, a couple of people who'd been recruited in this country, tried to blow up the World Trade Center, did kill a few people. They tried to bring the whole thing down. This was the first indication that this scheme had gone badly wrong. And there were further, you know, this went through the 90s until, you know, the big demonstration, 9/11, 2001. Nonetheless, unfortunately, this hasn't really deterred them. You'd think they'd give up after that and think this is a bad idea. But no, fast forward to the Syrian war, where it turns out that we've been funneling and we've been enabling our allies in the Middle East, Qatar and Saudi Arabia principally, and Turkey, to support, fund, supply the same people. I mean, these extremist jihadis, people like who are really part of Al-Qaeda. They changed their name because that was an Al-Qaeda scheme to sort of brighten up their image a bit. So some of them, they're called Al-Nusra. There's another big group called Ahrar al-Sham. And they are, you know, literally Al-Qaeda by another name. And we give them our support, either sort of at one remove, like Al-Nusra, because they've got a bad name. But this other one I mentioned, Ahrar al-Sham, you get, you know, learned articles, op-eds from the Brookings Institute saying these are really not so bad. You've got former U.S. diplomats, you know, touting for them, saying they are not so bad. These are the guys who, you know, give you a public flogging for skip Friday prayers, and God help you if you're a woman in the territory they've covered. So we are, through our arms supply network in Syria, we are supplying arms to what is Al-Qaeda. I mean, it's a pretty shocking fact, but that is the case. And these are the people we're enabling to take over Syria. I mean, can you believe it?
Only because I've been covering this the whole time, and mostly because I've been talking with your brother Patrick this whole time. I mean, really, since Iraq War II, long before the Arab Spring, but all the way through. So, yeah, I know this stuff, but it still blows my mind. I mean, sitting here reading this thing, I just think I almost can't believe it. I know I sound like a birther kook when I talk about it. I know that your editors are probably like, man, are we really sure we stand behind this headline? And then, yeah, of course, what are we going to do? It's true. We have to run it. It's true. Yeah,
it's true. It's true. I think, you know, people, you know, it's so hard. I mean, I've had, you know, ex-CIA people get violent when you say this to them. You know, this is such a deep, terrible secret, you know, the way they helped start all this in the first place. This enabling of the most extreme factions in Afghanistan, really for this, you know, to fight the Soviet Union. And even after the Soviets had left, even after their war was won, they went on doing it, you know, just for the heck of it, really.
Sure, in Bosnia. Remember, colleague Sheikh Mohammed was a veteran of the Bosnia War, where America was on their side.
Good example.
And the Chechens.
The Chechens.
And you write about the Chechen thing in here, don't you?
I mentioned, yeah, I do. But I, you know, there's another point about the Chechens I didn't have time for, which is, you know, the Russians, we, you know, another story, but Georgia, you know, our friend Saakashvili, who tried to get us into a war with Russia, the Russians kept complaining that we were Saakashvili was helping us funnel jihadis up into the Caucasus, into Chechnya. That was a plan of ours. It was an operation of ours.
In the Bush Jr. years, you're talking about.
In the Bush Jr. years, yeah, absolutely. And this was, you know, it didn't get much. I mean, I wrote about it a bit, but it didn't get much commentary in this country. Surprise, surprise. But that was a perennial Russian complaint, and they haven't forgotten it. And I think it's probably true. I mean, I'll go stronger than that.
Sure.
It's true. And of course, but no one paid attention because this was the Russians complaining.
Right. Well, and this is the thing about And this is the part where I'm kind of confused. I'm anxious to hear what you think about, you know, how you measure the difficulty of turning the ship of the empire around when we adopt all of our allies' foreign policies. Like, they all hate Assad so much, and they hate the so-called Iranian Shiite crescent so much that they've got our government fighting on the side of the 9/11 hijackers against our allies' enemies, when Hezbollah hadn't even attacked us since 1983, and Pat Buchanan at least says that that was the Amal militia that did the Beirut bombing. It wasn't even Hezbollah that did the Beirut bombing, and yet, but we're supposed to prefer Al-Qaeda to Hezbollah, and even a year and a half after the declaration of the Holy Caliphate and all of this stuff, it's amazing to me, and I'm not calling for invasion, but you're the one who said it, and I think you're right, that their policy still is to use Al-Qaeda, if not the Islamic State. They don't seem to mind the Islamic State that much, but to use Al-Qaeda, at least, to still try to get rid of Assad, even after the Russians have intervened and said absolutely not, and, you know, called our bluff.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, it is amazing. I try and, you know, I trace in the article, there's an important point, and I talk about it, in 2011, when the Arab Spring happened, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, it broke out, dawned or something. The U.S., the Obama administration thought, this is great. This shows we can, you know, ally ourselves with the Arab Street, with the, you know, Arab Spring, all these calls for democracy, and then we'll be the good guys in the Arab world, not Al-Qaeda, you know, not bin Laden jihadis, and we'll, you know, that'll do us a lot of good. And this is the, you know, this is bad news for Al-Qaeda, they said at the time. And, you know, the New York Times immediately reprinted, and all the pundits agreed, you know, and this was, you know, this was the end of the old war on terror. We finally won through this. What they didn't seem to notice was Al-Qaeda was saying the same thing. Hey, this is great for us. This is, we're overthrowing all these corrupt police regimes that the Americans were sponsoring. And, you know, now this is, you know, scope for our side, and we're really going to go places here. The U.S. then said, I hope they're not making this too complicated, but the U.S. then said, or was saying, well, to outflank Al-Qaeda, we will, you know, we'll link up with moderate Islam. Moderate Islam is the way to go. And they identified that as the Muslim Brotherhood, this venerable organization, which was originally set up by the British to be, you know, anti-nationalist and anti-communist. What they, again, failed to notice was the Muslim Brotherhood was, like, linked to Al-Qaeda.
Now, you know, I'm sorry, Andrew, we got these hard breaks, and usually I just record through the break, but unfortunately the way I'm set up, I can't today. Is there any way I can hold you one more segment?
Of course you can.
Okay, great. Now, it's going to be a long top-of-the-hour news type break, so everybody take a break. We'll be back at 6 after with Andrew Coburn.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, kiddos. Welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. On the line, Andrew Coburn, author of Kill Chain. Buy it for yourself and for your friend for Christmas. Or Hanukkah. Or Kwanzaa.
or, you know, another time.
A special relationship. The United States is teaming up with Al-Qaeda. Again. And, of course, we're talking about support for the al-Nusra Front. The moderate Al-Qaeda in Syria. And I like the way you noticed this and wrote it up in the article here, Andrew, the part about how, well, ISIS likes to brag about their savagery and put out videos of them shooting a bunch of people in the back of the head and that kind of thing. And then it's so easy to go from, wow, those ISIS guys are really brutal, to, wow, al-Nusra is so much less brutal than ISIS. They're moderate by comparison. When, no. These are the guys that did the coal attack. These are the guys that killed 4,500 of our guys in Iraq War II. These are the guys that did 9/11. Keep your eye on the ball for a minute. For God's sake, they're the ones who are still loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. ISIS has never actually attacked the United States.
Well, right, you know, and this is all part of a calculated campaign. Al-Qaeda, back about 10 years ago, starting about 10 years ago, they thought we better clean up our image a bit. This is, you know, this, because they had the reputation at that point of being like, you know, like ISIS has today, chopping people's heads off on TV and so on.
Yeah,
so
Zarqawi
forth.
And his guys.
So, yeah, in Iraq, Zarqawi. So they said, no, we got to cool it a bit and, you know, act nice. And in fact, Bin Laden even discussed changing the name. Maybe we'll change our name. You know, we can clean up the image. And that was just before he was killed. And in fact, they did change the name. I mean, not in the center, but all these offshoots in Syria, in Tunisia, in Yemen, all over the place. They started giving themselves new names, al-Nusra, Ahrar al-Sham, Ansar al-Sharia, across the place, not in Yemen, actually, but in Libya and in Tunis and in a lot of, a lot of Africa. So that is why, you know, they can get away, the government can get away now with sort of, when it turns out we're supplying them and they're, you know, they, you could go on YouTube and you'll find 100 or 500 videos of Al-Qaeda offshoots in Syria using U.S. weapons, U.S. supplied weapons, and say, well, that's not Al-Qaeda. That's just, you know, part of the moderate opposition. So it, you know, the scheme is working very well.
Yeah.
It just shows what idiots we have running things.
Well, and the thing is, you know, for the historians checking the archives in the future from now, this is being recorded in December 2015. We're 4.5 years into this, and we've had the same story over and over again, where CIA-supported, armed, and financed groups go over in mass numbers to the al-Nusra Front, or lose a battle to them and lose all their materiel. Or whatever it is, over and over again. And then now we're supposed to just accept that, well, they've got a coalition. They call themselves the Army of Conquest now. And it's true that Zawahiri's guys are part of it. But so are the lovely Ahrar al-Sham, who, as you said, are basically the Muslim Brotherhood, right? Which is more or less the same damn difference anyway. Patrick, your brother's been saying on the show, there's no difference between these groups. They're all Bin Ladenites, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, in fact, Ahrar al-Sham, their sort of spiritual mentor is Abdullah Azzam, I was talking about earlier, founder of al-Qaeda, you know? So, and it's so disgusting. I mentioned in the article, I couldn't resist, that a little while ago, four eminent pundits from the Brookings Institute published an article saying Ahrar al-Sham, not so bad. What you have to know is that Qatar, the principal financial sponsor of Ahrar al-Sham, is the state of Qatar, the kingdom, whatever you want, kingdom or emirate or something. And Qatar just gave $15 million to the Brookings Institute. So, you can't buy a think tank pundit in Washington, but you can rent one. And
you'd think they'd launder the money a little bit more cleverly than that, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Through one of the Republican PACs or something. Yeah, it'd be good.
And this is all, of course, you know, America fighting against itself, or our government fighting against the American people on the side of our enemies, as a way to try to compensate for how bad they screwed up with the Iraq War, with Iraq War II, right? You know, there's a great quote. Yeah. You have a great quote of Bandar in here about the Shia, but I wanted to add the one about that I learned. It was in the Financial Times from Prince Turkey. Prince Saud al-Faisal said to John Kerry, Daesh is our response to your support for the Dawah. Meaning America's intervention in Iraq and fighting on the civil war on the side of the Shia from 2003 through 2011.
Exactly so. I mean, that's, the Saudi, you know, this gang of gangsters, really, this gang, the Saud family that control Saudi Arabia and, you know, have the big leverage over the price of oil and so, and have bought $150 billion worth of American weapons. You know, they are completely panicked by Iran and by the Shia. And, you know, I quote Prince Bandar in the article saying, you know, a billion Sunnis have had enough. It's a bad day. It's going to be a bad day for the Shia. I mean, this is a religious war where we are allied really on the wrong side. I don't say we should ally with the Shia, but we're certainly enabling these horrible groups like Al-Qaeda. And even ISIS in a way, you know, because ISIS couldn't really survive without its pipeline from Turkey. And Turkey's our ally. And when, you know, we support a good NATO member and, you know, they're buying American weapons all the time and, you know, coming on as a sort of, you know, there's a few problems like the suppression of the press and arresting journalists and torturing people, but we forgive all that because they're our ally. And meanwhile, they are really the sort of back office in terms financially and in terms of supplies for Daesh or ISIS or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so now what about this? What about Turkey now invading part of northern Iraq near Mosul? They say that they're just training the Peshmerga. But when the Baghdad Shiistan government told them to beat it, they said, no, we're staying. And I wonder what you think is going on there.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, what they're thinking about first and foremost, of course, is the Turk, the PKK and the, you know, the Syrian extension, the YPG or mm-hmm. YPD. So they want to bolster their own sort of position for first in as dried plank that in northwest Iraq. And this group that they're, you know, their excuse for being, you know, having gone into, sent these troops into Iraq is they're helping to train this group, but they're not really Peshmerga. What they are former policemen from Mosul who are run by this guy, Kapaji, who was a former mayor of Mosul, who says he's going to liberate Mosul from ISIS. I mean, good luck with that.
How many men does he have?
Not too sure. A few hundred. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, it'd be nice if someone could do it, but I don't think this guy is going to do it. But, that's providing the excuse for the Turks to send troops into Iraq. I mean, I see it primarily as some part of some move against the PKK, against the, the Turkish, the Kurdish, opposition armed opposition in Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because, of course, not funny, haha, but funny in an ironical way that America and Russia are both backing the Kurdish YPG, the Syrian branch of the PKK, as you said there, in their war against the Islamic State. And so, this whole thing, somebody should really draw a map of the Middle East with all the like color-coded lines of who all is fighting for and against, which all sides tie us in knots.
You need a wall.
Yeah, exactly. Never seen such a knot. All right, listen, you're great. Thank you so much for your time on the show again, Andrew.
It's a pleasure.
That's the great Andrew Coburn, everybody, writing at Harper's. You got to go read this. A Special Relationship, America and Al-Qaeda Again. Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate.
And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
Propaganda, death ensemble, burial to be. Corpses rotting through the night in bloodless misery. Scorched earth, the policy, the reason for the siege. The pendulum, it shaves the blade, the strafing air blood rage.
Hey guys. Great interview there with Andrew Coburn, huh? I really like that guy. I talk too much, I know, but man, I just... What are you going to do? I'm really excited to see that article in the Harper's, though. And with, you know, the legendary Coburn craftsmanship behind it, it's not just some article. It's great. And by the way, he mentioned his wife, Leslie Coburn. She is a great journalist. She's not his wife, you know, as her title or something. She is a great journalist. And one of the first very serious books I read about American foreign policy was Out of Control by Leslie Coburn, all about the Iran-Contra scandal and the support for the death squads in Nicaragua. I forget how much of the Iran stuff was in there. I think it was mostly about the Nicaraguan angle on it. But really great book. And actually proved to me that, like, oh, that wasn't hard to put away 300 pages real quick and gain a whole new understanding of everything. Yeah, there's a precedent set. So yeah, I'll never forget that. That was back when I was in 10th grade or something. All right, anyway, so yeah, the great Andrew Coburn, he's great. He's also the father of the famous actress from that TV show, House. Olivia Wilde is her name. And also, I believe, Laura Flanders, who is a progressive media person herself, of course, a great anti-war person. So, isn't that fun? And yes, the brother of Patrick and of the late Alex Coburn. What's this? Huh. Hey, man. I'm always willing to change the subject to the Oklahoma City bombing. Local news coverage, man. I don't care really what it says. Oh, it's Charles Key. Charles Key said, hey, I had these questions, and now this DNA here, this proves that my questions were legit questions. Let's get to it, man. I don't know for sure if it's a John Doe 2, 3, 4, 5. It could just be an innocent unknown. Could have been Scott Bakula. Just leaped in a moment too late and left his leg behind. You know, I don't know. But, answers. What is this, a cover-up? Or give me some answers. Is this America or this is Soviet Russia? What do you mean? There's an extra leg and there's some DNA, but you're not telling? Give me the damn DNA! What the hell is this? And anyway, like I said, I don't know if this is a red herring or not. And I don't mean like a deliberate red herring, like somebody's deceiving us with this on a, you know. I don't think that that term necessarily implies intent. Just means like a false trail, right? This could be a false trail. It's not like, oh, this is the only thing, and you should know, this is not the only thing that any Oklahoma bombing story critic, you know, has to hang their hat on or anything like that. It's just something. What's funny about us Oklahoma bombing revisionist types is that we're desperate for the next book, the next video, the next time Terry Nichols says something on the record again that may be of value or not, or I don't know, the next time Jesse Trenadu wins a minor victory in federal court in Utah against the FBI and all their record hiding, we hang all our hopes on that, that the story will break through.
that the media at the high levels will have to admit that, like, hey, man, you know what? What the hell? It's long enough ago now, and Iraq, too, has proven there's no responsibility in media, so no one's going to get in trouble. No one's even going to have to admit that they fell down on the job then. Just come out now and go ahead and say, you know what? McVeigh had friends and help, and don't tell me his closest co-conspirator was two states away at the time. Damn it. We don't believe that no more. John Doe 2 never existed. We don't believe you. The question is, was it Michael Brescia? Was it Mark Thomas? Which member of the Aryan Republican Army was John Doe 2? Anyway, as I mentioned to the Washington Times reporter on the show the other day about this, it's in the book by Andrew Gumbel. I should have memorized the page number. I'm pretty good about that most of the time, if I try to. But it's in the book, Oklahoma City, by Andrew Gumbel and Roger Charles. It is a very conservative piece of journalism. It is not conspiracy trash nonsense. It's good stuff, and a lot of good stuff isn't even in it. That's how conservative it is. It's way too conservative for me. But in there, they quote the damn federal prosecutor. The U.S. attorney, I don't know if it's the U.S. attorney or the federal prosecutor, you know, lower, the ADA, so to speak, but whatever, saying, and the way he says it is, I think if you got the entire team and had them all sit around the table and had them raise their hand, if they thought that maybe somebody else was in on it that we didn't get, then probably chances or the probability would be that some, many of all of the hands would go up. Like I said, the way he says it's just ridiculous. And I didn't even do it right because it's supposed to have double and triple and quadruple negatives in it. And you have to like do the equation. You have to like assign N plus 2 and whatever to his double negatives and figure, solve his riddle. And what he's saying is, if you put the entire prosecution team, the federal prosecutors that put McVeigh and Nichols in prison, if you made them tell you the truth, they would all admit that they let the guilty go free. There's no denying it that they did. And their excuse is the shabbiest excuse in the world. That they really, really, really wanted to execute McVeigh. And if they prosecuted everybody who did it, well, then they might not get to kill any of them. So they would rather not punish guilty people at all than punish the guilty in a way that could jeopardize what was really going on. And you know, when I mentioned Michael Brescia, it could very well have been Richard Guthrie, and then maybe I just kind of proved myself wrong, because it seems that the reason that Jesse Trenadue is such a heroic lawyer on this case, because his brother was killed in federal custody, is because he was mistaken for Richard Lee Guthrie, a very probable John Doe number two with Timothy McVeigh. And so he was punished, but he was just tortured and killed in his cell. But oops, wrong guy. They killed an innocent man, Kenneth Trenadue. Although later, they murdered Richard Guthrie in his cell too, the real Richard Guthrie. I think in the same year, just a couple of months later, called that a suicide too. But anyway, wouldn't it be funny if just somehow, somebody magic just kicked this damn sand pile over and, I don't know, maybe waterboarded all the newspaper editors in America into reporting this story until the story was reported? I'd be willing to see that. I'd be willing to order that, if that's what it took, I guess. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey y'all, guess what?
you can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, you guys. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Never can find a good place to start talking over that. I like it. All right. Anyway, so yeah, man, it's my show. I know I do go really quickly, don't I, from magic to torture. If only I had magic powers. If only I could torture people into doing what I want. Yeah, well, it's frustrating, the Oklahoma City bombing thing. You know, another thing that I said to the reporter when I was supposedly interviewing him on the show the other day was that Danny Colson, the FBI agent who was on the case, says, yeah, man, I think we should reopen it because I think a bunch more Nazis were involved. And the question wasn't phrased to him in a way that said, yeah, but weren't some of them at least working for you or supposed to be? And so, because they didn't phrase it that way, he was like, yeah, why not open the case, man? Because, look, there's a lot of reason to believe. And he's not just goofing around. He's admitting. They're like, yeah, you're right. Anyway, it should have happened a long time ago. I know nobody cares. It was 20 years ago, and 9/11 was a lot bigger, and whatever, et cetera, like that, and whatever. But still seems like a big deal to me. That's why I was such a conspiracy kook when I was a kid. Because I saw the Oklahoma bombing, and they were obviously lying their asses off. What do you mean there was no John Doe 2, everybody? Forget it. Oh, come on. And every newspaper reporter and or editor, at least, in America was like, okay, well, that's the end of that. Come on, guys, let's go watch the O.J. Simpson scandal. Let's never mind who all's getting away with 169 counts of murder. It's amazing to me, and I thought they must all be in the Skull and Bones, and it's a secret cult. How in the world do you explain it? I think the easier explanation is they're really, really stupid. And most reporters do nothing but fillet government all day long. It's amazing they can even breathe with government down their throat all day long. That's what a fact is. It's a thing the government says. That's how you know whether it's true or not. That's how you know what's right and what's wrong. What does the law say? Remember when the space shuttle blew up over Palestine, Texas, on the eve of the Iraq War? Iraq War II. Sorry, I know it's hard to differentiate which Iraq War somebody's talking about at any given time. But remember when the space shuttle blew up? The damn thing blew up. Flaming pieces of wreckage fell all over Texas. And people with cameras went outside and pointed their cameras at the flaming wreckage falling out of the sky. And then they put that footage on TV. I'm going somewhere with this. Regular people all over the world were looking at TVs, were looking at pieces of flaming wreckage, were looking at space where a space shuttle should have been. But you know, we haven't heard a communication from them in 20 minutes. The space shuttle exploded. That's what happened. It exploded. They died. And yet, every media source, all on TV, every radio channel, the shuttle apparently has been lost. It seems as though the people must be dead. And no one on TV or radio media, at least, would say, yes, it exploded, period, until George W. Bush, dear leader, finally came out and gave his official statement. Oh, look, the leader of us
we, the government, I mean, the people, whatever, our alpha male, George W. Bush, he's officially announced that, yeah, the goddamn space shuttle exploded like we've all known for 2.5 hours now. But now you can stop saying apparently. Now it's true. Because now the government says so. That's how they think in real life. That's how they think. They don't have to be instructed. Hey, make sure to say apparently. No. Nothing is true until the government says it's true. And if the government says forget about it, forget about it, are there orders? It's as simple as that. No skull and bones. Just the government itself is the conspiracy you're looking for. That's it. Executive power. Those who serve it. And it is incredible. I mean, in fact, I bet the Oklahoma bombing is probably subtly, psychologically, why I took psychology and social psychology in junior college. I was like, man, I want to study how it is that grown adults can be so stupid. It's just incredible to me. It's just absolutely incredible to me. Can be so willingly docile, you know? Who am I going to believe, you or what I know to be true? I guess you. Because what the hell do I know, huh? Cry 300 million people in unison. Anyway. That's my Oklahoma bombing chip on my shoulder, sorry. Miss J.D. Cash. I don't understand why people die of pneumonia all the time. Isn't there some way to scoop the goop out of their lungs? I don't get it. There's got to be a cure for that, man. Like something you can make them breathe in a mist that'll dry it all up real crispy and then they'll cough that shit out or something. I don't know. I'm just saying that I wish that J.D. Cash and Jeff Huber were alive still. That's all I'm saying. It seems like not just a horrible, tragic way to die, to suffocate to death, but it just seems senseless and avoidable. That's not treatable? Goop in the lung? Scrape it out of there somehow, for God's sake. It's 2015. Shoot some lasers in there or something. Anyway. Bring back J.D. Cash. That's all. All right, now here's a subject I uncovered all week. Well, it was a short week. But the Yemen war is still going on, and people are dying. And it is the Saudis' war, but it's America's war, too. And I don't even know how it's going, guys. Honestly, man, I'm not doing the work to keep up. Everything that I read sounds like stalemate. It sounds like a permanent air war. It's... You know, there's a little bit of push and pull over who controls Aden, the port town where the coal was bombed back in 2000. The Houthis have been calling for peace talks, but they're the ones who are getting it. The Iranians, even though you're told the reason that we're supposed to prefer Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State to the Houthis is because, oh, the Houthis are backed by Iran. Well, they're hardly even backed by Iran. Not in any real sense. Much less than, you know, the relationship between Iran and Hezbollah, for example, in southern Lebanon. And even Obama admits, and not just Obama, but there's multiple sources for this, that the Iranians warned the Houthis, don't march on the capital city, because that's going to freak out the Saudis and they're going to bomb you. So just, you know, by all means, you know, beat up the guy in power or whatever, but don't sack the capital city. And then they did. Contrary to the sound advice of the Iranians. And then that supposedly became the excuse, just as the Iranians warned, for the Saudis to launch this war. Well, of course, as you could know just by asking yourself and background knowledge that you have about the world and the way it works without me telling you, America's running the entire war for the Saudis. The Saudis don't do menial tasks like load bombs on planes or even, you know, clean and maintain jet fighter bombers. That's all for, you know, white trash Americans to come and do for them. And all their mid-air refueling and all their arming and all their everything is accomplished for them by the United States of America. We're now in the ninth month of war against the poorest country in the Middle East that never attacked us. And we're fighting on the side of the only Yemenis who ever attacked us, or tried to, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula.
Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism vs. Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism vs. Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm just trying to get y'all to be anti-war is all. It seems like it should be pretty easy. You know, people ask me all the time about how to deal with their families on these issues. You know, I'm arguing with my dad, and he's such a damn neocon and this and that kind of thing. Well, my first advice to you is don't fight with your dad about this stuff. Unless your dad is a really good guy, except somehow, for some crazy reason, he's pro-torture. And you just think, no, man, I can talk him out of this, and then it'll be good for his soul, because he don't really want to be pro-torture. He's just identifying with his damn party. And if you really think that you can change his mind without, you know, making y'all into enemies of each other or whatever, then I guess go ahead. Or if you guys love each other and everybody understands that you can fight like cats and dogs about politics, but it doesn't matter because nobody cares because you're just fighting about politics, then that's cool too, depending on your family dynamic, if you're into that kind of thing. I could see how, if it's something really serious, not what should be done with Social Security or whatever, but, you know, something like torture, maybe you really do need to fight about something like that. I mean, I'm not really telling what to do. I'm just saying, you know, kind of rule of thumb. Nah, why fight with them, dude? They don't know. Who cares? What difference does it make? Unless they're, you know, can actually make a difference, in which case, you know, maybe it'd be more worth it to fight with them about it. But anyway, assuming you're going to have friends and family around, and you're going to be talking about politics over the Christmas break, and you're going to go ahead and do it. And I say argue like Harry Brown. History didn't begin on September 11th. You know that. Come on. Why do you hate these guys? Because of what they believe? Or because of what they do? Right. That's why they hate you. What you do. And remember, even if you were for it, doesn't matter if you're for it or not. Who cares? Point is, you know that George Bush's father put troops in Saudi Arabia in 1990, starting in August of 1990. Troops and more troops and more troops. Operation Desert Shield. And you also know, probably, that it never ended. And that's what led to Ronald Reagan's auxiliary stormtrooper army of Mujahideen terrorists in Afghanistan to turn against America, occupying the Holy Land. What Islam has to do with it is solidarity. Of course, you know, those bases were there so that Bill Clinton could blockade and bomb the place for 8 years straight. It wasn't like they're just standing around passing out welfare checks. And so, they made enemies. And that's just how it is. Doesn't mean, oh, boo-hoo, you're on the side of Osama or whatever, who cares? I mean, we're far enough away from that now that people can be grown up about that, can't they? Come on, admit it. The 20th century existed. You know that it did, dude. You were there. Remember, Party Like It's 1999 used to be a song about the future. Back when it was the past. So, there. George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton caused a terrorist war against us by expanding the American empire into the Middle East where it didn't belong. That's the answer. And everything the U.S. government has done in reaction to the terrorist war since then has made it worse and worse and worse. And as we're talking about with Coburn, at this point, deliberately so. As we've been covering on this show this whole time, most especially with his brother Patrick, Andrew's brother Patrick Coburn, America took the side of these guys in Libya and in Syria. And I'm sorry, I know you guys have said it, heard me say it a million times, but this is how I would argue. If I'd argue with my cousin about it or whoever, you know, somebody in my family about this. Actually, everybody in my family is pretty good on war, I think. Even extended family and stuff. I think that pretty much everybody's against this crazy crap, certainly by this point. But anyway, I guess that'd be my advice to you, is just go, yeah, come on, man, it's Bill Clinton's fault. If you're arguing with a Republican or if you're arguing with a Democrat, it's George H.W. Bush's fault. Bush 41, senior, whatever the hell you're supposed to call him. Everybody knows that, come on. And that's the thing I learned in social psychology. It's all about social psychology. It has nothing to do with the truth. So if you sound like, no, really, I swear, then they won't believe you. But if you go, look, don't be an idiot, then they will. Huh, I guess that does make sense. It's all about how they are going to fear they look in front of the third person in the room. Doesn't even matter what's true. I should quit right now. That should be it. I resign. I'm over. Yeah, someone tweeted this thing. There was a, oh, it was a Washington Post story about Trump and how all the Trump supporters, if you show them his many, many, many flip-flops, all it proves to them is how honest he is and what a great guy he is. And then there's a quote from a guy in there who says, listen, I forgot how he says it exactly, but something like, if you gave the general public a test on which candidate is for which positions, they would all flunk across the board on everything. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. They don't know who's more likely to bomb Iran, Hillary or Donald or whoever the hell, Rand Paul. They don't know. They don't care. They're barely interested at all. And if they're into it, they're probably horrible, right? Yeah, give the power back to the people. But the people want to deport all the Mexicans. It's the elite establishment that's going, whoa, what's going on? We don't want to do that. The people are even worse than the government. On a lot of things, anyway. Right now, not just a majority of the American people, but a majority of millennials support ground troops, support the third Iraq war, an invasion, another invasion of Iraq to fight the Islamic State. But then get this, 85% of them said they would not go fight. 85% of American millennials. Hell yeah, let's have a war. It'll be great. I remember I was just little, but I remember my older brothers really cheering on the last Iraq war, and it seemed like a lot of fun. Maybe I could have fun cheering on this one. They all cry. And then they all say, oh, what? Go fight it myself? Me? You mean? No. Well, you know, I have other priorities, like Dick Cheney said. Hey, I had a wife and a kid and a family, like Jonah Goldberg said. Jonah Goldberg, the biggest warmonger in America. Well, but I have a family. Yeah, so does 3/4 of the U.S. Army. What the hell excuse is that? Jonah Goldberg. Anyway, whole generation of them now, grown up on drones. Dude, I'm going to send my robot to go and kick your ass. That's what you mean by ground troops, right? Send a droid army? I'm all for sending a droid army. Oh, or did you mean poor black and brown and rural white folks who have no job opportunities and believe what they see on, you know, commercials during football? Yep. Back to Bo Bergdahl, kids. Go see what he thought the army was supposed to be like and how badly he reacted when he found out the truth. Oh, read Joseph Heller about World War II. That was the good war. And I know it's a novel and it's funny as hell, but it's... Man, these are the guys who are running the thing, huh? All right. There's a job I am not getting. No matter what. Majority of U.S. millennials support troops to fight ISIS. Amazing. 85%. Support you going and fighting. Your son going and fighting. But not them. Well, maybe we could do like a duck, duck, goose, and then you can just cross your fingers and hope to get real lucky. Anyway. I'm done for the week. Not quite. One more. Sunday morning on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. I'll be on 8:30 Pacific time. 90.7 FM in LA. Thanks, guys, very much for hearing me out. I'll be back here on Monday.